From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly podcast about California politics. It's kind of a weekly podcast because we actually missed a week. So, but we're back.
Yep. Here we are.
Yep. Yep. I'm John Myers from KQED. That's Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly.
Ribbit. Yep.
We were gone last week because I was on furlough.
Yep.
So, you know, but I've...
Welcome back.
I've now done my part to save money for public broadcasting to try to keep our budget balanced. Our budget balanced, unlike the state government budget.
Oh, which, segue. Segue.
There's the segue. Well, you know, we have to talk about the budget again. This is a podcast that we're taping on Thursday, the 6th?
6th, yep.
Yes, okay.
Yep.
So it'll be out on Friday. The legislature's in recess. The state capitol, the hallways are darkened. Not really. You know, they should. That would save money, wouldn't it?
It would, but then you'd run into things.
Yeah, well, the staff is still there. And I saw one really hardworking staffer who's worked on a lot of policy issues yesterday who chided me for saying, like, oh, things are quiet because they're all working on what the hell to do next right now.
And what are they doing next?
What are they doing next? I guess that's what we have to talk about. So we missed a – we'll recap briefly since we missed that podcast, but everybody else has moved on, of the governor signing the budget revision, which was last week. And using his line item veto power, which actually is a point we need to talk about here. But let's just talk about what he did for a moment. I mean, he got a budget revision that didn't solve the problem because we had that great big fracas breakdown in the assembly about the
HUDA.
HUDA, our favorite, the local gas tax borrowing, which didn't happen, and the oil drilling proposal off the Santa Barbara County coast. And so the governor went in and sliced out enough money to leave a half billion dollar reserve. I don't know that – I can't imagine that anybody really should be surprised that he went in and did something. I mean, I think it seems illogical to think that the governor would have left that without a reserve, even if the legislature said, we know we've got to come back in August and fix that.
Well, they knew. And they knew. I mean, we were there on the assembly floor at 2 in the afternoon, whenever it was, when they finally wrapped up. And the speaker knew at the time that the governor was going to make some line item vetoes to
Didn't know from where.
Didn't know the details. But that was – and that was part of the deal that allowed the local gas tax revenue grab to not happen. That was a – wrote a big long story about that last week, which you linked to in your blog, Twitter feed.
Something like
about how that happened.
You know, Twitter's been down today, and it's been almost like liberating to not have to tweet. Somebody tried to hack it nationally. Anyway, I digress.
Have to feed the beast.
Well, okay, but let's talk about before we talk about the process of the line item vetoing, let's talk about some of the places that he cut. I mean, he took a meat axe kind of to some of the social services programs again.
Right. Healthy
Families being one of the most prominent that provides health care for low-income children or children of low-income families.
Cut welfare grants for children.
Exactly.
Closed domestic violence shelters.
And pretty much zeroed out the Williamson Act, which is rural counties use a lot of that.
Protection.
Preservation of open land,
open
space. Trying to think of some of the more prominent ones. But, I mean, those are...
Domestic violence, the AIDS. The AIDS stuff.
Well said. The people who care about the program will be great, Anthony. Thank you. The point is...
I'm sure I'm the least of their problems at this point.
Well, we didn't bring in all the details. I mean, you know, if you're listening to this podcast for specifics... Another problem. Silly you. But let's stay to the larger political point for a moment. I mean, the places that the governor went, some of them, I guess you wouldn't be surprised because, I mean, there are only so many other places that he would probably go. There's a whole lot of... I don't know if I'd call it conspiracy theory. What would you call it? A whole lot of grumbling about that, you know, particular places he went to make a point. Like the one you hear all the time, the Williamson Act.
Right.
Well, he zeroed out the Williamson Act funding, which is important to Republican-leaning counties because the Republicans in the Assembly didn't toe the line and approve the local gas tax thing. I'm not sure that I can go down that conspiracy path enough. I mean, the Williamson Act has been targeted before, that money. So that's not terribly surprising. I mean, any of that conspiracy?
No, I mean, I think a lot of this stuff had been targeted before. I mean, a reduction in the welfare grants. Heck, the governor proposed eliminating CalWORKs altogether. Same with Healthy Families. So, you know, and if you balance off, the Williamson Act was important to Republicans. Some of these other social programs are perhaps more important to Democrats. You know, I mean, I think the governor sort of used his discretion, and there aren't that many areas of the budget to cut, you know, and it's a good political ploy. I mean, you see a lot of political jostling now. Democrats saying the governor acted in bad faith, and it's kind of poisoning the well for the budget negotiations to come that we all know are coming. But it's an opportunity, I think, for Democrats to finally have a group of cuts that the governor and the governor alone owns politically. You know, the Democrats have had to make a lot of these very deep, unpopular cuts that cause them problems with their constituents. And this, I think, politically allows them to pivot a little bit and say, look at what the governor did. And so focusing on these $400 million in cuts, you know, can lead people to look past the $12 billion or so in cuts that the legislature just made.
And, of course, the governor's office and the governor himself, you know, have pretty much said, well, you sent me a budget that didn't solve the problem. I had no choice. My hands were tied.
Well,
and we'll go and, you know, we'll go a few more rounds into both sides of this story.
Yeah. And look, the $500 million that the governor cut last week doesn't solve the problem either. I mean, let's be honest. You know, there's billions of dollars in scored savings that are never going to materialize, and the revenues continue to plummet.
Ye old gimmicks.
Yeah. And so we're going to be back at this. I think the governor's office would really like to be able to hold off until January and wrap it all into one big budget discussion again. But,
I see how you do that.
In the next week or two, we're going to get some estimates on the state's cash flow problem from the Department of Finance, and we'll see how much what this budget did to alleviate the cash flow problem and when we're going to run out of money.
Yeah, well, and we're going to see from the controller's office as well. We've been waiting. We may get it on Friday when you hear this. We may get it next week, according to them. You know, the results of their – this is the new popular term, isn't it? The results of their stress testing.
Yes.
That's the federal problem term, and now it's the state problem. But the results of their stress testing of the budget revision plan and how it affects the cash flow and whether the IOUs can finally end or not.
Right. I mean, that's an important point. They're still being issued.
Yeah.
So it's not like, you know, in other budgets when we've had to issue IOUs in the past, you know, those immediately went away when a budget was in place. This is a different problem.
And it's kind of interesting with that. I mean, given how the IOUs got so much public attention, and maybe this is the fault of our side of the world.
Seven of us who cover this,
yeah, right. The remaining Capitol Press Corps, but I mean, you know, the state's news media as it is, maybe we have somehow led people to believe that it's all over, when in fact you just raised a great point. The IOUs have not stopped,
right? And that was a point that the Department of Finance made after the budget was signed. I think that the speaker and the pro tems budget staffs, I think, were pretty clear on, but. You know, but when there's a big budget deal, there's a lot to write about, and certain pieces sometimes don't get written about. But there are people out there who are still receiving IOUs and a lot of banks out there that are not accepting them. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about the vetoes because we referenced this particular brouhaha a moment ago.
Yes.
Brouhaha.
Kerfuffle.
Yeah. I think I might like kerfuffle better.
Okay, then.
Brouhaha is a little overused. The latest, this kerfuffle, see, it even makes me laugh saying it.
Yeah. It's delicious with potato kugel. No, kerfuffle and kugel. No, moving on.
Yeah. It's good to see you haven't lost your randomness while we were off for a week. We referenced the line item veto debate kerfuffle earlier, which in a nutshell is, did the governor have the power to line item veto pieces of this budget revision? Did he have the same power that he has in an actual budget act?
Right.
And the shorthand here, and then Anthony can give us the colorful analysis. The shorthand here is that in an actual budget that's enacted in the normal way, there are multiple bills, multiple appropriations in there for how much the state's going to spend for the fiscal year. The governor has the power, according to the California Constitution, to go in and reduce spending in any particular appropriation or a lot of the appropriations. We're not going to spend $40 million here. We're going to spend $18 million here. Well, this time he got a budget revision bill, which already was lowering the spending of existing appropriations. And the question is, does he have the same power to add to that reduction that he has to reduce somewhere else? If you're still with me, God bless you. This, they're like, different layers of this, right? There's a legal layer. There's a political layer, which you referenced a moment ago. There's all at the same time.
Yeah, and I think it's sort of, in Clintonian terms, it depends on what the definition of an appropriation is, right? You know, it's an argument now that Assemblyman John Perez from Los Angeles, the caucus chair, I believe, is that what he is, the caucus chair, received an opinion from his private attorney, Stephen Kaufman, and also from the Ledge Council, the legislature's attorney.
Both Perez and Speaker Bass got that opinion Wednesday from the Ledge Council.
Saying that indeed the governor has overstepped his authority. The governor received an opinion from lawyers in the Department of Finance saying, nope, we're okay. So now the question is, who and when will the lawsuit be filed?
Who will file it? When would they file it?
And what will they be wearing?
No, probably not. No. But I mean, the legal issue, without trying to get too far into it, because neither you nor I are an attorney.
Oh,
which
I am an attorney.
Then why are you in the news business? But that's another story. Considering that we're not really attorneys, the shorthand version of the legal debate is what an appropriation is. Because the as I understand it, the Constitution gives the governor power over appropriations. Are the particular things in this bill an appropriation or are they not?
Are they a reduction? Right.
Yeah, and right. The Ledge Council clearly says these are not appropriations. The governor's chief counsel at the Department of Finance says they clearly are. Back and forth.
Clearly they don't agree.
And clearly they don't agree. And as I wrote online this week, it's always fun to watch lawyers take a particular case. Like in this instance, they were both referring to a 1923 California Supreme Court case. It's always fun to watch lawyers take one case and argue it differently. One lawyer says, well, no, that case clearly means X. The other one says, no, that case clearly means Y. I mean, it probably is going to end up in court. But as you and I were talking about before the podcast, somebody's got to have the money to take this to court because it's not cheap to get the attorneys and do all the process.
And the legislature's not going to file. I mean, I talked to Assemblyman Perez yesterday.
Not sure that they can. I talked to him, too.
Yeah, and but they are ready to file an amicus brief or multiple amici briefs.
Is it an amicus or an amicus?
Friend of the court brief.
Okay. Let's call the whole thing off.
Okay. So, you know, the question is who will take the lead? I mean, will it be, you know, some of these groups who obviously were affected, who got cut? But, you know, it's probably going to take a large group like the Service Employees Union, who took some additional cuts to in-home support services in these vetoes, to file or at least to bankroll the lawsuit. And
if you're looking at a group that has money, they're the most obvious ones who have money.
They've
we don't know
money.
Whether they'll do anything or not.
You know, and like we said before, I mean, I think this is just a good, clean, regardless of what happens legally. And I've talked to some lawyers who think that the Democrats are on some shaky legal ground, even lawyers who are somewhat sympathetic to the Democrats' cause here. But it's a good political opportunity, as we said before, to sort of wrap this around the governor's neck and change the subject off of this very unpopular budget that was just approved by the legislature and focusing in on the parts that were done by the governor and the governor alone.
Yeah, and so the Assemblymember Perez is doing an event here again as we speak on Thursday here at the Capitol to kind of drive that point home, get a little more free media coverage.
And drive the governor's approval ratings down, which are, I mean, his approval ratings, there was a poll released this week. They're at an all-time low. Is it 28%? Is that
I think
it was?
So. All-time low for him, not quite as low as Gray Davis, but in that direction.
What were Gray Davis's approval rates?
22 or something like that.
The correct answer is
the bottom.
I don't recall.
21? No, 26.
26.
Anam, who's my summer intern, is like
has all 26 fingers
motioning
up.
From
very
the control
creepy.
Room. 26? You remember that number? Yes. You're sure with that? You're going with that? Okay, good. She's convinced.
Okay.
Well, there you have it. Now we've settled that. But yeah, poll numbers aren't good, right? Exactly. So it gives another opportunity to kind of push that point. I think you're exactly right.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that it's going to work, and that in 2010 the governor will not be reelected.
Well, there you go. And we're taping this podcast on the 6th anniversary of his appearance on the Tonight Show.
This is it.
Where he said, "I'm going to run."
Yep. Much to the shock.
Not in so many words.
I think that was the phrase.
Yeah, not in so many words.
Yeah.
Well, the other court news from this week, which actually is a bigger piece of court news right now, because this is actually happening in court right now, was we got the ruling from the 3-judge panel that has been overseeing the mess that is the California prison system. And the 3-judge panel, federal judges, ruled that the state needs to reduce the population in the prisons in the next 2 years by somewhere on the order, depending on how you calculate it. There are a lot of numbers out there, between like 40 and 44, 45,000 inmates over the next 2 years. A lot of inmates. Now, again, the order doesn't say that you're going to release all of these or you're going to release 44,000 inmates immediately. It says you're going to lower the population. I do think this is, you know, it's political spin, but it has been effective political spin by conservatives and Republicans saying that means you're releasing 45,000 prisoners.
Right.
Even though that's not what the order says, to be completely fair to them. But it's a convincing argument in the world of public
opinion. And this dovetails nicely with what we're going to be dealing with when the legislature's back from their recess in a couple of weeks here. Remember, in the state budget, they made what they called, what was the term of art, the unallocated reduction?
Yeah, the $1.2 billion.
But they didn't say where they were going to cut from. And there was this another kerfuffle, if you will, over the governor. The governor and the Democrats are in pretty close agreement on a prison reform policy that would lead to a reduction of the population by 25,000, 30,000, roughly, over 2 years.
Yeah, and that came out this week because the Secretary of Corrections, Matt Cate, said that he thinks the judge's order goes further than what the governor's plan would do. Because there was some discussion, right. The attorneys for the plaintiffs, for the inmates who filed the case, said, look, the governor's plan will meet the court's order. And the administration, the Schwarzenegger administration, said, no, it won't. And actually, they, you know, under our plan, we would only get to about 35,000 over 2 years reduction. This is 40 to 45. But you're right that the Dems and the governor are closer. They're obviously not on the same page completely. But compared to the legislative Republicans and everybody else, I mean, yeah, they're.
And so we're going to come back. We're going to vote on prison policy in August. This will not be a 2-thirds vote. These are just legislative changes, so they can be simple majority votes. And I think we're going to see the Democrats basically agreeing with the governor and a lot of chest pounding from Republicans talking about how Governor Schwarzenegger and Democrats are, you know, setting criminals free. I mean, I can see, I'm looking into my crystal ball. I see the Meg Whitman, Willie Horton style ad for her gubernatorial campaign. I just, you know.
Okay,
you heard it here first.
Let's game play out your scenario for a moment. Since
the Willie
we have nothing
Horton
else
ad?
To do. No, not that part.
Okay.
That the Democrats in the legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger are going to hold hands and enact some kind of prison reform that's going to satisfy these issues. And first of all, the courts, the federal judges gave the state 45 days to submit a plan. And it's somewhat hard to figure out whether they then said we might reject the plan, then what might happen. And we all think that that we easily could end up in the U.S. Supreme Court with this case about the state's role in deciding what happens and the federal court's role. But that's a slightly different story. But let me game play out your theory here about the Democrats and in the legislature and the governor. What then do we make from politically? What then do we make of the relationship between the governor and legislative Republicans as we go forward on budget issues and everything else? I mean, because they've been a lot tighter, shall we say, than they have been in years past through this budget chaos.
Right.
Then what happens to that relationship? Well, I mean, and how much do you really get legislative Republicans going out and really beating the governor over the head in the press? Do you think that really happens?
On this stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that if you saw the press releases that came in the reaction
to the court ruling,
this is a good issue for Republicans to talk about. I mean, you know, whether they go after the governor directly, whether they go after the Democrats, I don't know. But I mean, I think it's an issue that this is a conversation that Republicans want to have with the people of California about this. They believe that Californians agree with them on this issue. And I think that you're going to see them trying to make some political hay out of this. I mean, whether it's an attack that's focused on the governor directly, I don't know. As in terms of the relationship between the governor and legislative Republicans, I mean, I think we've seen over the last couple of years here that these alliances are fleeting and temporary, right? At one time, it seems like the governor and Senate Republicans are at each other's throats, and then they're holding hands, and the Senate is killing the proposals at the end of June to the stopgap budget measures at the governor's request. And so, these things change. And yeah. I think that if and when we get to the prison stuff in August, that will be a new chapter in the long and sordid relationship between the governor and the legislature.
I guess a couple of things. I'm not entirely convinced that the Democratic majority in the legislature and the governor can quickly strike a deal on what prison reform is, because there are Democrats in the legislature who want to go further than the governor wants to go,
right,
about the issues of nonviolent offenders,
reforming
about the sentencing
three strikes
commission, which is a huge thicket that no one has ever seemed to kind of clear away over the last few years. So I'm not terribly convinced that it's going to happen in a short order. And I do wonder about the timeline that the court has imposed to have a plan in place. And what happens if there's not legislative agreement on that plan?
Right.
Matt Cate, the corrections secretary, yesterday on our talk show forum, on the KQED show forum, we tried to get him to that point specifically. Would the governor just take his own plan if he doesn't have a legislative agreement yet?
Right.
And they're not quite sure. They're not going to say yet. But the other issue I was going to say is, well, actually comment on that one first. What do you think about whether or not they'll get together?
It's not just the Democrats on the left. I think you're going to see some moderate Democrats too. Look, in the Assembly, you've got three Democrats who are running for attorney general.
Yep.
Are they going to want to put up a vote that can be portrayed as the early release of criminals?
Pedro Nava.
You've got Pedro Nava, Alberto Tirico, and Ted Lieu. And then you've got Juan Arambula, who's moderates from the Central Valley. Juan Arambula, technically no longer a Democrat now, but
he declined to state.
All right, but chair of the Public Safety Committee,
mm-hmm.
Or is he still?
Mm.
Hmm.
Don't let facts get in the way. Keep going.
But I mean, assuming that you get no Republican votes, I mean, to your point, and then you've got a vacancy in the Assembly as well. So if you lose some on the left, and then you start losing some on
the
right,
you've got some there too. What about Lou Correa?
Right,
from Orange County, Democrat.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of there are more tough votes there too. Although. And then you've got people like Gloria Romero on the left,
who really has been pushing the sentencing commission and probably wants to go beyond maybe where the governor has been. So, I mean, the politics there are interesting. So the other question I was going to ask. I think we're in for a lot more debate between those two. It's not a done deal between the Dems and the Gov.
Yes.
But then when you look at Republicans who have said they're going to put forward their own plan. Now, they've said it already, and we have, we often ask Republicans, if they're opposed to something, what's their alternative?
They claim they have it.
Well, they do. It's a secret plan to end inflation.
So
what will that plan be? What will that plan look like? How much will that plan get to be debated? I mean, it is fair to say that Republicans often say our plans don't even get up for a full debate. Will there be time for that full debate? I mean, what's the sense of urgency here? Again, I go back to the court wanting something in 45 days, and the legislative session is supposed to come to an end. What is the sense of urgency due to a full discussion of this huge issue?
Well, look, it's hard for me to be sympathetic to the Republicans on this issue. And this is something that I wrote about as well a couple of weeks ago. Remember back when the budget deal was struck and then this talk of the prisons piece of the budget almost blew up the whole deal.
Right.
I mean, there was that whole thing where, the governor, Sam Blakesley, the Assembly Republican leader, was saying, hey, look, if they try to jam the prison vote as part of this, then the whole deal is off.
Right.
And at that time, I was talking to my Republican sources about the Republican plan. And the Assembly and Senate Republicans do apparently have, as you said, their secret plan to end inflation. They have something on paper that, they were all set to release and that, during that time, and then there was no early release of that plan, if you will. But we still haven't seen it,
Right.
And so if they want to say that we haven't had the conversation about their ideas and their plan, well, let's see it. I mean, let's hold a press conference, put out the plan, or just slip it under my door or something. Let's get on with this discussion instead of just criticizing, the governor and the Democrats and the federal court.
But now let's go back to the legislature in a whole for a moment. We're sitting here in a recess. What, 2-week recess? 2.5 weeks? I mean, how long will it have been by the time from the budget vote to when they come back? Almost 3 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
which begs the question from the public's perspective, where is the legislature? Where are the people they have paid to be up here? And I don't mean to be on a soapbox here, but with these huge issues standing in front of the state, the prison issue, the finances that aren't quite settled, they're taking a vacation. The staff is here. The staff is working. I don't want to criticize the process completely. But from a PR perspective, to see the legislature gone, the governor out of the state, I mean, you know, one has to wonder.
He got back yesterday.
What's that?
He got back yesterday.
Okay. But one has to wonder, do they not? You know, what message does that send to the public?
I'm sure they would tell you that they're working, that they're now getting some much-needed time in their districts, reconnecting with people since they've been in the bubble here in Sacramento, and now they're in their districts or on their junkets or whatever they're doing.
I would...
Working hard.
Be it far from me to say that they're not doing their job. But I do go back to the atmospherics and the perspective that
so cynical.
Cynical,
Myers.
I'm skeptical, York. Although sometimes it bleeds into cynicism, it's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
The longer the budget debate went, the more cynical.
Now it's over. Hey, everything's fixed, man.
Everything's great.
Just chill out.
We can go back to everything being happy.
That's right.
Was there anything else we were going to talk about?
No, I think that's it.
All right. Well, you can tell that we're only half into maybe we're in recess mode ourselves.
We are.
Oh well. All right. Well, more. We'll see what happens this week. So more next week.
Okay. Then
we'll be back.
Maybe it won't just be about the budget.
It's always going to be about the budget. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.